Thank you. So, first of all, thank you everybody for this great workshop. So today I want to talk about many body aspects of fermionic symmetry protected topological phases. The talk is based on the two papers which you put on archive around summer in this year. People who really did this work is my student Hassan and postdoc Ken, both at UIUC. I will talk about many body aspects of fermionic SPT phases, but mostly I will just illustrate some examples. I will say something general, but mostly I will work with a specific examples, which are 1 plus 1D KITF chain and 3-dimensional topological superconductors. So I think it may not be necessary to, I think it's perhaps absolutely not necessary to this audience, but let me just remind you what I'm talking about. So I am talking about SPTs. So these are the states of matter, which are somewhat trivial, meaning you can deform such states into a topologically trivial state, meaning product states, in the absence of symmetries. But once you start to impose some symmetries, they are sharply distinct from topologically trivial phases. Since these states are deformable to the topologically trivial states, they have a unique ground state on any spatial manifold, unlike phases with topological order. The question I'm asking today is the characterization of such phases of matter. And there's a no convenient order parameter which we can use to distinguish different SPT phases, because almost by definition, these phases respect all the same symmetry. So therefore, we need to find some other convenient order parameter, which will not be won't be the local order parameter, but there may be some quantity which you can use to distinguish these phases of matter. So that's something I would call a SPT topological invariant. So the simplest example of a SPT phase is provided by KITF Shen, and I think I already said, but I want to emphasize that today I will be focusing on the fermionic SPT phases. So the KITF chain is a perfect example. So it's a 1 plus 1 dimensional system, and it's defined by this simple tight binding Hamiltonian on 1-dimensional lattice. And there's the usual hopping T, and there's also the pairing delta. If you are in this regime, the state is gapped. Okay, so this is a free fermion SPT, but in principle you can start adding interactions, and so on and so forth. So this simple SPT phase, a topological superconductor phase, is characterized by the famous Majorana fermion modes appearing once you cut your system open. Okay, so that's it's an end state that appears at the boundary of this 1 plus 1D system. And two, it is characterized some sort of topological invariant. For example, within a free fermion system, you can write down a topological invariant by using a Berry connection, assuming there's a translation invariance. So it's a Berry connection in momentum space. And if you consider a Wilson loop in the momentum space, so this BZ is a Brillouin zone, 1-dimensional Brillouin zone. And you can show this quantity is actually Z2-varied, so it's quantized. So for arbitrary system, for a generic tight binding Hamiltonian won't have this property, but for this particular case, this integral of Berry connection exponentiated is a Z2-invariant. at this stage, I want to remind you that this is purely a single particle quantity, as it is written in terms of single particle wave function, which is schematically written as here, U. Okay. So there is such some topological invariants known for this system, which you can use. But once you start to add interactions, the meaning of single particle wave function is opaque or maybe just completely gone. So this invariant cannot be used. So I will come back to this issue later. But just for now, I just want to quickly remind you how this SPK phase looks like. So it is best described by this cartoon. So we have a site X here, where we have a fermion F dagger. But conventional trick is to rewrite this F in terms of its real and imaginary part. So you introduce two real fermions, which I write C left and C right. So they are real fermions. But in this Kita F chain phase, the Majorana fermions from one side, let's say CR, form a kind of pair with the other Majorana fermions coming from the other side. So they form a kind of Majorana fermion version of a singlet, whereas the physical fermion F, the original fermion F is defined here. You can take the extreme limit where this Majorana singlet formation is perfect. In that case, you can really analytically write down end state, which is purely localized on the left or right of your open Kita F chain. Okay. So technically, I can rewrite this Majorana fermions in terms of new complex fermion G. So originally, I had F. And I split F into left and right, CL plus ICR. But then you can reorganize in this particular parameter for the set. And then you can write this, you can essentially solve it. So what you see immediately is that there are two ground states, which is associated to this dangling Majorana fermion here and here. So you can write down two ground state plus and minus, which differ by the presence or absence of a complex fermion, which is formed here by combining these two Majorana fermions. Okay, so there are two ground states because they are dangling Majorana fermion. Okay, so the degeneracy of ground state in the presence of a boundary is the another signature of non-trivial SPT order in this problem. And obviously, for periodic boundary condition, you will not see a such degeneracy. So the ground state is unique. Okay. So you can make this problem slightly more interesting by imposing more symmetries. Okay. So far, actually, there's no symmetry yet, but we can start imposing symmetries. So for example, you can study Kita F chain in the presence of time reversal symmetry or reflection symmetry, which I define here. Okay. It is known at the non-interacting level that the classification in the presence of either time reversal or reflection is integer, meaning there are a set of phases which are characterized by a integral topological invariant, which is written here. So there, the classification is like quantum Hall effect, integer quantum Hall effect. So this nu is somewhat like the Hall conductance or Hall conductivities. Once again, I would like to emphasize that this is a purely single particle quantities, and this Q is a part of it's some quantity which is related to the single particle BDG Hamiltonian. The precise form of this Q is not necessary today, but I just want to emphasize that this is a single particle quantity. Okay. since it's single particle quantity, it won't work if you start to add interactions. And in fact, in this QTF chain program, once you add interactions, it was found that this integer classification basically breaks down. So single particle classification tells you something wrong. Okay. So there's no integer phases labeled by integer topological invariant anymore, because first of all, this is ill-defined. And second of all, two phases which are adiabatically connected to single particle topological phases with different topological invariant, they may be now connected once you start to add interactions. So the classification now breaks down from integer to Z8. Okay. So I think this is the simplest example which illustrates the necessity of the many-body formulation. So single particle physics is in some sense not entirely wrong, but it's clearly not enough to capture this Z8 of phases which exist in the presence of interactions. Okay, so I will focus on mainly 1D example, and I will treat three cases separately. Case one with basically no symmetry, or other way to say is that only the parity of the fermion number is preserved. Yes.
I got confused. It seems at 1D, QTF chain, if you consider interaction, there's no ordered phase, right, in 1D. So it's completely wrong. Non-inducting case is over. In 1D, if I consider 1D case, mean field, we get the topological superconductor, yeah. Two cases. Yeah. If I consider fluctuations, then it's completely washed out.
Right. So
non-inducting seems completely wrong.
That's right. So that's a... I will address... Actually, I will not address the... effect of phase fluctuations.
Yeah.
But even without talking about phase fluctuations, you can start adding like interactions among BDG quasi particles, which is enough to kind of destroy this non-interacting classification. But this formalism, in fact, the formalism I'm going to present may work even in the presence of phase fluctuations. It may be interesting to see the effect of phase fluctuations. But for this story, we don't need phase fluctuations.
So you are talking about any dimension.
Well, yeah, the formalism works in any dimensions, but yeah.
If you also imagine the one-dimensional system is actually a superconductor is induced by a three-dimensional superconductor
right.
By a proximity.
The proximity, yeah.
Right. You don't have to think about this like real one-dimensional system.
Not the real one-dimension. It means
yeah. Yeah, it's attached to a very big three-dimensional system.
Actually, just clarify, when you talk about the number parity, you mean the dimensional f, the little x?
F is f dagger f summed over x, so it's a total number.
And so, could you give us an intuitive argument why parity matters? So let's say you had a system with open boundary conditions. Having all the even number of fermions, what does that change? In other words, why do you want to impose the fermion number parity constraint?
It essentially means that you cannot write down Hamiltonian with single f, which is very strange. You know, fermion is C dagger, C dagger, C dagger, C dagger, CC. That's okay, but there's something strange to write down C dagger, CC or something like that. So there's no matrix element connecting a state with odd number of fermions and the even number of fermions. That's all I mean.
Okay, so I think I just misunderstood. It's not like you're looking at in a canonical ensemble. It's right. Still grand canonical. The number of particles is not defined, right? But what you're saying is that what you mean by parity is not, sorry, what I thought.
Yeah, your Hamiltonian always commutes with this operator. Yeah. Right. Okay, so any other question? That's a simple example I want to talk about. Okay. So this is the kind of motivations and issues I already addressed. So there are many free fermion SPT phases, which you can characterize by using free fermion topological invariant. But some cases, free fermion invariants are not enough or just wrong. So we want to have a formulation of fermionic SPT phases, which is intrinsically many-body. The good example is kind of not exactly the same problem, but I think good analogy is the integer quantum Hall effect. So at the single particle level, you can write down topological invariant TKN and integer by using single particle block wave functions. Whereas for the case of integer quantum Hall effect, you can alternatively write down Hall conductance or Hall conductivity by using many body wave functions. Or if you think about sigma xy is actually related to the current correlation function. There is the many body formulation that exists for the quantum Hall effect. But this is not the case for the phases I just introduced. So the goal of this talk is to get analog of many body Chan number for fermionic SPT phases. Okay, that's right. Okay, so the guidance we are going to use is the effective field theory approach to SPT phases. This is in some sense just the motivation or guide. So in some sense I'm not going to use much field theories, but nevertheless this is how we start to think about this problem. So how do we detect SPT? So as I said, we want to characterize SPT phases, but there's no other parameter of any kind. So the I think natural thing to do is to start to couple or disturb your SPT phases by using some external probe. So since the symmetry is preserved in SPT phases, by Noether's theorem, there's some sort of current that exists if your symmetry is continuous. Or you can be more general, but there may be some external field or experimental knob which you can add to your system to probe your system. Okay, so that is the basic philosophy one. So we try to expose our SPT phases to some sort of external perturbations. And the nature of the external perturbation should depend on the symmetry you're preserving. If the charge U1 is conserved, natural external source or external perturbation is the U1 gauge field, of course. But like a Kitaev chain examples I just explained, there's no charge U1 symmetry, so we want to be more general. Okay, although the philosophy is the same. Okay, so if the fermion number parity is conserved, that means you're sort of dealing with intrinsically a fermionic system. So such system you can couple to the structure of the spacetime, which is called spin structure. So that is a structure which couples to relativistic fermions. Okay. So that is something we can turn on by hand to see what happens to your system. Of course, it is not obvious if condensed matter fermions actually couple to spin structure because there is no relativistic invariance, but in many free fermion SPT phases we know of, they are described by some sort of Dirac Hamiltonians. It's kind of, you can think of it's an emergent spin which you get in the SPT phases. Okay, so if your system starts to be sensitive to the external perturbation, here it's a spin structure. It may be capturing some sort of non-trivial topology of free fermion or fermion SPT phases in general. But this is not enough for my purpose because we had other symmetries, time reversal or parity symmetries, diffraction symmetries. So these symmetries are, in terms of space-time, it's a symmetry operation which reverses the orientation of space-time. Okay. In this case, we kind of postulate kind of a slight generalization of this first point. We can postulate that you can turn on some sort of external feed which is related to this symmetry, refraction or time reversal symmetry. And the natural candidate stands out to be you reverse the orientation of your space-time, or you kind of gauge the orientation of space-time. So you get the unoriented space-time. So if you have an orientation reversing symmetry, it turns out to be useful to study your system defined on the unoriented space-time. And in unoriented space-time, there's the analog of spin structure, which is called pin structure, which you can turn on. So again, you can study how your system depends on pin structures on unoriented space-time. Okay. So that's the strategy. So generically summarizing, we consider d-dimensional space-time. And if we have a, so the symmetry group over your system consists of something unitary and on-site, like a charge U1, or some other symmetry, for example, Zn, or spin Sz conservation, something like that. In addition, we also care about a this structure, which comes from the fermionic nature of your system, or it may come from orientation reversing symmetries. Okay, so these are, so we consider our system in the presence of this structure, okay? So we consider a path integral or partition function defined for x and eta and a. Okay, so schematically it looks like this. So phi is, it's maybe a bad notation, but it's your fermions or all kinds of matter degrees of freedom. Yes.
Yeah. So two questions. One is spin and pin structures are independent, or is it something one is kind of bigger than the other?
Maybe you can say that way, but let's say they're separate things. So if you have a oriented manifold, and you think about spins, the fermions living on this oriented manifold, then you have a spin structure. So that's basically something like if you go around a non-trivial cycle of your space-time, since it's a fermion, they may pick up minus sign. So that specifies the sign structure. If you have pin structure, that's an analogous thing to spin structure, but it's for the unoriented space-time.
And is it, you know, so in the case of on-site symmetry, there's a gauge field, there's actually a source terms that you put in.
Right.
Can this spin or spin structure be represented by fields, like background field?
So we can, I don't want to think that way, but that may be possible. But you can put,
meaning you're talking about turning it on and shutting it off.
Right. So you can turn on spin connection, for example.
Okay. Uh-huh. Spin connection.
Okay. So this is the path integral. So for example, for the quantum Hall effect, we really don't worry about this and the properties of X, but we just talk about, for example, charge U1 gauge field. And so then we can study a properties of this effective action. And naturally, well, generically, we expect there's some interesting term, which is a signature of the interesting properties of a system, which I may call topological term. So in the imaginary time path integral, it's usually an imaginary part of your effective action. So there's an I here. And this part is usually independent of the metric. So it's a topological term. Chan-Samuel term, again, is an example. And the just other terms of this kind. Okay. So then essentially the problem is to in some sense classify what kind of phases are possible for in this path integral description of your SPT phases. So there's this beautiful work done by a couple of people. For SPT phases, I'd like to say it's assumption, but it may have more very rigorous ground. But I would say for SPT phases, there's the kind of claim that this part depends only on some sort of equivalence class of manifold and the background gauge field and structure. That is, of course, expected because if this is topological, it should not depend too much on the details of this background x, eta, a. It should be very insensitive to very detailed structure of x, eta, a. But furthermore, people even claim that this term depends only on the cobordism equivalence classes. Okay, so this part is not really necessary, so I won't go into details. But roughly speaking, you can define some sort of equivalence classes for the manifold. So if you have a two manifolds, spacetime manifold, X1 and X2, and we can find the interpolating manifold between X1 and X2, we sort of define a equivalence classes for. So we say X1 and X2 are cobordism. So that defines some sort of equivalence classes. So so the claim is that this term depends only on the equivalence class, this equivalence class of space-time manifold, and the background field configuration and the structure. Okay.
You change the genus, you're saying? Or?
Yeah. So as far as they are, actually, I'm not sure. But it only depends on the... Like that. The way I draw, it looks like that.
Yeah. Then it's like, but then what can't you change?
The spin structure.
Spin structure cannot change. Yeah.
Cannot change.
Yeah.
But with that spin structure, then all the surfaces are cobordism. You could fill them in. Right.
Yeah. So since this is an exact quote from the Wikipedia, I thought it's right. It is an interesting claim which I saw quote exactly. Okay. So the cobordism is a kind of equivalence relation, but it's much coarser than the topological or diffeomorphism equivalence. So demanding this to be cobordism invariant is a stronger assumption. Usually we don't make this assumption, but for SPT phases, somehow this works. Okay. So then this partition function can be considered as this equivalence class of I will explain this notation in a minute, but this partition function can be considered as a map from this set of data to a U1 phase, and this set of data, as I said earlier, we only care about equivalence classes, and you can even define some sort of group structure for this equivalence classes. For example, you can define a union of two manifolds that define the sum, and so on and so forth. So these equivalence classes, they form an Abelian group, which is called this omega D structure BG. So partition function is a map from this Abelian group to a phase. So essentially, SPT phases can be classified by this Abelian group. Okay. Here the notation is you have three things, structure D and the BG. So X is a D-dimensional manifold. A is a member of this object BG. So if you have a U1, for example, you care about BU1, which roughly speaking, at least for my purpose, it is a set of all field configurations. Okay. So if you fix one field configuration, it's a member of this space. Yeta is a choice of your structure, okay, choice of spin structure, or choice of pin structure, and so on and so forth. So once you fix these data, partition function defines, associate the particular U1 phase, which is this topological term.
So this is all for interacting?
Yeah, so far we haven't said anything about this microscopic.
I guess what I mean is, yeah, if you didn't have interactions, then it would be a finer distinction.
So for example, I'm not sure if this is right, but for example, if you have a topological order, this will perhaps not work.
No, but I mean, yeah. If you have, suppose you didn't have interactions, you had the case you mentioned, you had Z invariant,
right.
And then with interaction, reduced to Z8.
Right.
So is Z8 captured by cobordism?
Yes.
And then Z is captured by something that's...
So, okay, so this is a background, and this is a great story, and we are motivated by this. But here are some couple of examples. If I have only the conservation of fermion number parity, that is the case of Kita F chain. We don't impose, the plane Bernier Kita F chain. So we only care about the fermion number party conservation. But then we are interested in the dependence of effective action on the choice of your spin structure. Okay. Following the previous notation, I'm interested in this object when B is a 2. I think 1, I forgot. This can be space-time dimension. So let's say this is 2. Okay, so let's talk about space-time, this space-time dimension. So in 1 plus 1 dimensional QTF chain, this is 2. Since there's no background field, I say just a point, but you can sort of ignore this part. And then the textbook says it's Z2, so the classification is Z2 as we know. That's reasonable. You can do the similar thing in the case of time reversal or reflection symmetry, but as I already mentioned, in these cases, we want to see the dependence of your system to your choice of pin structure, which is defined for unoriented space-time. So there's kind of minor difference between something we call pin minus or pin plus, which depends on, for example, the sign of time reversal squared, which can be 1 or minus 1 for fermionic system. If you have a fermion with spin, this is the, of course, usual time reversal symmetry. So for the QTF example, since it's a spinless fermions, I use this case, P minus, and in this case, this group, cobordism group, is Z8, which is consistent with this Tedekovsky QTF result. Okay.
Why R squared to the minus 1?
Why? So this may be... this may not be pure parity. Maybe it's parity composed or something. But anything which reverses the sign orientation of space, I'm just calling it a reflection. Yeah.
In this example, so what is the actual background field?
So I'm going to tell you. Yeah. I'm going to tell you. Yeah. Okay. And so what is going to be important for us, that's why I have to explain this, is this a, so this is a group, abelian group, and it is generated by some element. So in this case, generator is T2, torus. So that means if you want to probe your system, you want to choose torus, okay? Whereas for this case, this group Z8 is generated by a projective plane RP2. So if we want to probe your system, you want to choose this manifold as your space-time. If you make a wrong choice, for example, if you want to choose Klein bottle, for example, that will give you some result, but that will not give you the least possible topological phase. Okay. So that means you may be misguided by such a result because if you choose, for example, Z4, something which generates Z4 subgroup of Z8, you may wrongly conclude the classification of Z8, but that's simply because you are not choosing the right manifold. So the important input for us is that this generating a manifold. Okay. So is that clear? I think.
Just a quick clarification question. So mathematically, to define the equivalence class of cobordism, you need to specify this target, maybe not target, but the manifold of what you call the background field,
right.
The A. So what is A? Is it U1? Is it SU?
Yeah. So in these cases, we don't have a background field. But here, I talk only about equivalence classes between two manifolds. But if you have a manifold in the presence of background field, you want to find something which interpolates not just the space-time manifold, but the field configurations as well. So if you can find such field configurations, these two space-time with background fields are conceptually equivalent.
No, but I'm saying something simpler. In order to even define your action, you need to know what A is, because that's something that couples to your firm.
Yes.
So my question is it known what A is in this construction, let's say for Gitaev chain.
So A comes, so the gauge group for A comes from the definition of your problem.
Exactly. So yeah. Specific two examples you give on the next page.
Yeah. So maybe putting A is kind of maybe it's also confusion. But for our case, it is not necessary to turn on A. Yeah, but for example, for quantum Hall effect, it was something which couples to unitary on-site, protected by unitary on-site symmetry. You want to turn on such background here, but it's not necessary for this case.
So this is only for one dimension, one plus one.
No, this thinking is kind of generic.
No, this is general. The next slide is only for, this is result only for
yeah, this is for now for 1 plus 1. I will mention 3 plus 1 dimensions later in my talk. Right. Clear? Okay, so this is kind of background. So here's what I wanted to do. So so far the story is about classification, but what I'm looking for is something which I can use to diagnose system, not the classification. Of course, it's motivated by the classification. So in my setting, somebody or computer or something give me a ground state wave functions, which may be interacting. Okay, for free Fermi, it's a straight determinant. But then I would ask for a given wave function, do I know or can I extract topological invariant out of such many body wave function? Okay, it's pretty much like a many body Chan number. If you have a many-body ground state defined for twisted boundary conditions and X and Y, you can go ahead and compute a many-body Chan number. So we want to have some formula where you input many-body wave function, the output will be a topological invariant. So we are looking for such formula, and I think we believe we found such formula. So our formalism is based on something we call partial operations, and I will introduce what these are. Okay, but for the quick first example, case one. So remember, I said I will talk about 3 cases separately for Kitaev chain. So in Kitaev chain, what we do is what we care about is the spin structure from the previous consideration, and we said, yes.
So if I take a wave function from Lattice model, how do I do the spin structure?
Yeah, so I only care about twisted boundary conditions. Yeah, so spin structure simply means you have a either periodic or anti-periodic boundary condition in space. But of course, in terms of space-time, you can also consider a periodic or anti-periodic boundary condition in time. Okay, so there are 4 spin structures to care about. So space-time. If you think about space and time boundary conditions, periodic, 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 anti-periodic, anti-periodic, periodic, anti-periodic, anti-periodic. So there are 4, and they following the standard notation, I call periodic boundary condition R. And the anti-periodic boundary condition NS. That's the, for some reason, it's a standard notation. So the ground state for the periodic boundary condition we already looked at, which is which I showed you for the in the limit of 0 correlation lengths. You can construct similarly the ground state wave function for anti-periodic boundary conditions. So for Kitaev chain. For the 0 correlation length limit, we can write down many body wave functions. So following our discussion, we are interested in the partition function defined on T2 in the presence of these spin structures. So here, X is T2. This pair of symbols is my yeta, the spin structure. And for each, we write down something like a partition function, except I only have a ground state wave function. But however, since it's fully gapped system, presumably it is not necessary to put exponential minus theta h to define partition function. So I only consider ground state wave function. So I consider in the canonical formalism, these four boundary conditions are represented by these four partition functions, where trace R means it's a trace of your fermion system defined in the presence of periodic boundary conditions, and NS means you have an anti-periodic boundary condition. If you put nothing here, you put just one, natural boundary condition for fermion in time direction is anti-periodic, whereas you can change boundary condition for time directions for fermions by inserting this operator minus 1 to power f, the fermion number parity. Okay, so you have a full partition function written in the canonical language, and you get this number minus 1, 1, 1, 1. Okay. These numbers are topological invariant. For example, if you look at this RR spin structure, it's minus 1, which simply comes from the fact that the ground state fermion of parity is odd in this case. So this is the signature of the topological phase. Okay, this is a simple example, but essentially the rest of my talk is a generalization of this. Is this clear? Okay. Right. Okay. So now.
Can you explain why the fermion parity in the ground state with the current amount of energy is odd?
So why we get the minus sign like here? That. Yeah. So I think one way to think about this is for example given by Reed and Green. So if you have a if you think about it in terms of free fermion bound structure, depending on how you twist the boundary conditions, there's the zero mode fermion you want to fill at for example, zero and pi momentum, I think in this case. And depending on the boundary conditions, these zero mode fermions at high symmetry point, it may be hit or may not be hit by your momentum.
Interacting system, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the formalism is interacting, but this baby version of a calculation is for free fermion calculation. Yeah, but the claim is that this will not change even in the presence of interactions, which we have checked numerically in some cases. But here it's a simple example, right?
In the real space picture, right? You have this kind of dimer.
Right.
So how do I understand this minus one?
That's a good question.
It depends exactly what term you write down when you write down that dimer, whether you write C1, C2, or C2, C1. If you do it in a different order going around, you could be in a different sector.
Right, so that's perhaps somewhat hidden miscalculation. Yeah, so this is the ground state wave function, real space.
Right.
So somehow this. If you take these combinations, you know, either odd will be subtracted or even will be subtracted. In this case, in this limit, you can see it that way. Okay, so the two remaining cases is the case with refraction and time reversal symmetry. So based on our discussion on the effective action, we want to probe our system by putting the theories or systems on unoriented manifold. And in this case, we want to put the theory or system on RP2. That's what we expect. Okay, so how do I do this? So in this case, you don't have to put this. The point is that you don't have to put your system literally on RP2, but you can essentially simulate the pass integral on RP2 by considering the expectation value of this kind, where psi is a ground state wave function. It can be periodic or anti-periodic, but in this case it doesn't matter. So you take one of the ground state wave function, and you act with a refraction operator, but this refraction operator acts only a part of your system. So it doesn't refract everything, but you take some interval from here to here, and this partial refraction acts only within this interval. Okay? So it isn't somewhat like a matrix product kind of terminology or notation. This is what you're evaluating by computing this object. So this can be interpreted. Yeah, so why this is going to be related to RP2? So to see the connection, you want to go to more theoretic pass integral picture, where this direction is time, and this direction is x. So what this does is to insert this sort of strange region where particle move this in this direction, but it appears from here. Okay. Deforming this picture further, this is something we call a cross gap, where it's a small region where opposite ends, opposite points are identified. Okay, so this geometry is equal to so this setting is equal to RP2. So we expect this expectation value effectively realize a path integral on RP2.
Isn't it RP2 with a handle? It looks like you inserted this gap and a torus.
Yeah, so that's right. So, yeah, so this is not RP2, yes. But what happens is that if you make this region bigger and bigger, since there's a very big gap, nothing really happens in this region. So it's not going to be important that this part is connected to this part. So you can sort of cap off this region. So then it is a sphere in the presence of one cross gap. That's how we think about it. Okay.
So you actually calculate the overlap between two wave functions. One is the wave function on a torus, the other is the wave function on RP2. Is that right? If you take out the.
Yeah, perhaps you can think that way. Yeah. But here, these states itself are between terms.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but I think partition function itself can be written as overlap between. Yeah. Okay, so because I want to show you other examples, I want to be really quick. So if you go ahead and compute this quantity for the fixed point wave functions I described, the one before, this phase is really the eight phase. Even away from the exact solvable limit, zero correlation length limit, you can go ahead and compute this quantity, and you look at the phase of this quantity. Okay, so here, let's look at these blue circles. So this is the phase of wave function divided by pi over 4. And if you are in the topological region where hopping dominates the chemical potential, the phase of this quantity is very quantized. It's quantized in the unit of pi.
Actually, so if we just look at the magnitude of this quantity, right? So does it go to zero when the system size is very big?
Yeah, so it doesn't go to zero. So the magnitude is actually written here.
Okay, okay.
So somehow magnitude is also quantized, very, very quantized.
Well, but if the overlap between too many wave functions, you're usually going to be very, very small.
That is the case in higher dimensions, yes. In fact, in one dimension, I think what way to think about this is that it's this can be written as a, since this acts only within a particular interval, you're evaluating R for the given.
So in principle, do you take the interval to be very large, or
it has to be larger than the correlation length?
Yeah, then like nobody imagines this one to be very small.
But I think it's because in 1+1 the entanglement entropy is area rho, but that's just a point, so it doesn't really.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you think about this, is that you put this here and take integral over everything outside of the interval, so you get a radius density matrix, and then this I acts on the radius density matrix. But since it's in one dimension, it's a constant. In higher dimensions, it starts to decrease a lot, but like the area, it always goes like the area. Yeah. Okay. So is that clear? Okay. Yes.
So if you go one slide back.
Okay.
So you have essentially create this cut, right, and then you glue.
Right.
But you have some sort of conical types, some sort of singularities, right, at the edges.
Yes.
So is the symmetry such that the kind of contribution of those singularities always cancel with each other from the two sides? Is that the way to think about it?
I think maybe not exactly, and I think that's perhaps the reason why we see this something we call a loss of amplitude, because if it is topological.
No, not in the absolute value, but in the phase. But you could imagine there is some local contribution from each one of those points, just like distance local contribution.
Yeah, it seems like they contribute to the amplitude, but not to the phase.
Yeah, they cancel by some.
The geometry is actually not singular, though.
Yeah, but on the lattice, of course, it's sort of very singular. so if you do this for example in the real space cross cap in two dimensions, you start to see something is localizing here, in fact. But not in this case.
Okay, you do numerical calculation on what model?
This is still a non-interacting model. So it's just an ordinary key coefficient and just changing mu over t.
Okay. But later you will add interaction.
I will, so we did the interaction too, but I don't have a prod. But we have a disorder, for example. so we start to part of this model later. Okay, so since I'm running out of time, in fact.
It's probably okay. Every talk is longer than expected.
okay. All right. Yeah. Oops, sorry. Maybe that's a
sound. That's a sound.
Okay. All right. So if we are okay with this result, I can come back to this result later if you wish, but I want to show you the case with time reversal. Right? So time reversal, I will try to do something rather similar. So instead of doing a partial reflection, I want to do some sort of partial operation, but using time reversal symmetry. So it's actually not so obvious how we do this. But for the bosonic SPT phases, there's this paper by Polman and Turner, which discusses the use of this partial time reversal operations. Okay, so I just give you a formal definition where I write down my reduced density matrix or density matrix in the coherent state basis. So your reduced density matrix will be this linear combination of this. But for each coherent state basis. I make this for this transformation where I switch. This psi is the Grassmann variables in your fermion coherent state, which is something we use to develop, for example, coherent state path integral for fermions. But we switch essentially this left and right argument. I have to put some sign, the phase I that comes from the exchange of two Grassmann variables. So we write this operation by in terms of this operator U, and this something we call partial time transpose, partial time operation R, where this operator is that's a relatively trivial thing, which is just the unitary part of your time reversal symmetry operations. But time reversal symmetry also comes with complex conjugation. So for example, if you think about time reversal symmetry with spin, you take a complex conjugate, but then you have to multiply I sigma y. So this complex conjugation part is essentially taken care of by this part. But I think this is not really intuitive. We use this definition, but I think picture may be better. So let me go to the actual use of this. So what it does is to essentially swap bra and ket. So it creates the following path integral. Okay, so I will start with again. Unfortunately, picture is here. So I will start with again a one-dimensional chain, and I'm use the MPS way of writing this ground state. But I will focus on the particular interval I, which consists of two parts, I1 and I2. Okay. So if I take this ground state and then I trace out everything else living outside of this interval, so that defines my reduced density matrix rho of I. That's a reduced density matrix defined for the particular interval I. Okay. So this I consists of two parts, I1 and I2, and for either one of them, let's say I1, I will act with the partial time transpose I just defined. Okay, so by acting with partial time reversal, so this reduced density matrix is transformed to this object which I so rho is expanded. Imagine this rho is expanded in terms of the coherent state basis. Okay. So this is the object I'm interested. So I essentially ignoring this U part, I'm essentially somehow taking the overlap of original reduced density matrix and partially time transpose reduced density matrix. And once again, picture is more intuitive. So this is your psi bra psi ket, or maybe the other way around. This is this is psi ket, this is psi bra. And if you want to take a trace of rho times rho, you have the other reduced density matrix. So if you don't do partial time reversal, this part psi ket is connected to psi bra of this reduced density matrix, and then you take a trace, so this part will be identified with the other side. Okay, but for region I1, I acted with partial time reversal, which essentially exchanges bra and ket. So this, unlike this, this part is not connected to this part, but this is connected I forgot which one is bra and ket, but I exchanged bra and ket. That's why this one is now connected to this one, and this one is now connected to this one. So you have to multiply some unitary matrix, but that's again a slightly minor detail. So this is your kind of discretized space-time. Okay, so this is, we claim this is invariant. As we are motivated by this path integral over RP2, one may want to see why we say this effectively simulates RP2. So we thought about this, and this is the kind of the way we think about. So we essentially just replace this part by a big sphere S2 with another sphere S2. And there's two regions, this region and this region, through which these two S2s are connected. And then we sort of deform this picture to get this big sphere with one cross gap. Okay, which is a, each time I go through this exercise, I always get confused. So that is a non-trivial exercise. But nevertheless, the result seems to suggest that this really works.
Sorry, just the U.
Yes.
Shouldn't it disappear because of the trace? Why is it there? Why is it there?
Sorry. U is used here. sorry. Yeah. Thank you for pointing this out. Yeah. So everything is misplaced. So I replace this rho I to this object. So everything on the right must be partially transposed resistance. Yeah. Thank you for pointing this out. Okay, so and we have checked indeed that it works. So once again, for a zero correlation length limit, you can go ahead and evaluate this quantity, and you get a Z8 phase inside topological phase as expected. And again, this is essentially the same plot, but this case we look at this lead triangles, and the phase seems to be very well quantized inside topological phase. Whereas in the trivial phase, it's zero.
So could you elaborate on the relation to Z8? Okay, so you find a phase in a spiral form. And so then I guess what you're trying to say is that if you somehow consider multiple of these regions, then you need to go a factor of 8 before you could go back. So uh-huh. Is that mod 8 counting? Is that the picture? Like, how do you get multiple of that pile of 4?
Oh,
you're saying that yes. Just one representative phase out of
yeah. So this is a case where we can actually do the calculations relatively easily, and this result comes out. But
But you're asking, how does this phase really comes out of this calculation?
Well, I guess I'm also trying to, so you know, maybe it's just my ignorance, but so in the Kitaev chain case, does the Hamiltonian realize all of the eight configurations?
No, this is just this phase is the least possible Z8 phase.
Right, and that's what Kitaev chain actually realizes.
That's right, but if you take eight copies, this phase is going to be eight times of this phase,
right.
But that's actually 2 pi. So you get the trivial phase. So to get the other phases, you have to stack many Kitaev chains and maybe weakly make them hybridize or interact. But in this model, there's the in non-interacting language, the nu equal one phase, the topological phase is one unit of topological integer. But in many body invariant, it is simply replaced by phase. So that makes sense because you should get Z8. Okay. So maybe just last 5 or 10 minutes, or maybe this order. Maybe I will skip because of time. So higher dimensions is interesting because in higher dimensions, we have a similar breakdown of non-interacting classification. The example I'm going to talk about is 3+1 dimensional topological superconductor in the presence of inversion. Okay. So in this case, once again, the non-interacting classification is integer, but with interactions, classification reduces to Z16. Okay. And the relevant symmetry here is inversion. I'm imposing inversion. So as for the classification, I look at this object. It's now 3+1 dimensional space-time. Inversion is orientation reversing. So I look at this this pin, and this is Z16, which is agrees with known results. For me, what is important is the manifold which generates this group. And in this case, it's RP4. So that suggests that whatever topological invariants I'm going to capture, I have to simulate the path integral on RP4 by using many-body wave functions. So the thing we tried is this object, which is very similar to, essentially the same as this 1D reflection symmetric Kitaev chain. So I take a many-body wave function, which is given by somebody or you, and then I take inversion, but this inversion acts only within a ball. This picture is unfortunate, but there's this ball, which you cannot see, unfortunately, but there's a 3 ball, and you have a rest, but you pick up a particular region. And this inversion, partial inversion, acts only within this region. Okay, so like before, we are interested in this overlap. I think, as I mentioned before, this may be also written in terms of the reduced density matrix within this region D. Okay? Right. So the claim is that this will give you Z16 invariant. So we have checked this for a free fermion case. So for example, we take the example of 3D topological superconductor, B phase of helium. Okay. If it's fully gapped, and there's inversion symmetry. Okay. So this model, one of the signature of topological property, topological non-trivial topology of this system is the presence of gapless surface mode, which is Dirac-Cohn. But I'm taking I'm now interested in the surface, which is S2. So if you consider a surface which is a sphere, you get a Dirac fermion living on the sphere. Okay. So this is the kind of example I will try to use to demonstrate this. How it really this to show this quantity really capture Z16. So I want to show you two things. One is numerical calculations, and the other is analytical calculations. But to make a progress in analytical calculation, we have to make some assumptions.
So assumption is very simple. So since it's free gapped phase, a radius density matrix must be given by, essentially, by the physical Hamiltonian. Okay, so this is assumption which you can, for example, verify in 1+1 dimensions. But let's say this is just the for us this is a working assumption hypothesis. So if you use this the form of the radius density matrix, so now it written entirely in terms of surface degrees of freedom. It's a degrees of freedom in your entanglement Hamiltonian. But then this invariant is expressed as a trace of entanglement Hamiltonian exponentiated times this object which now acts on S2. This is originally acting on 3-ball, but since the entanglement Hamiltonian lives only near the surface, this is essentially the antipodal map acting on S2, so it's sent, it's exchanged the opposite point of S2. Okay, this n is normalization constant. And so we have computed this quantity by analytically, and I will show you the result. But many people told me that this is somewhat similar to this anomaly indicator discussed by these authors. They consider a topologically ordered surface, not the free fermion surface. But within topologically ordered surface states, they have a topological invariant written in terms of the data of your surface anions. And the connection to this formalism is not now unknown. But there are some similarities. Okay. So since we know the surface, Gapless surface state is the Gapless Dirac fermions, we can go ahead and evaluate this quantity, which looks like this awful expression. But can really go ahead and evaluate it, this quantity, and this is the analytical result he got. Okay. So yeah, there's the amplitude part, so the overlap gets smaller and smaller if you make it this region bigger and bigger. But this is phase part, which is a G16 phase, and it correctly captures G16 classification of inversion symmetric topological superconductor. So this is the calculation for the lattice topological superconductor on the lattice. So in this model, we realize various phases. But for example, in this phase, the phase of this quantity evaluated numerically is very well quantized, and it's G16 phase. Whereas in this case, it's twice as big as this phase. Okay. And in trivial phase, the phase of the partition function, well, this overlap is zero.
So this number is obtained by regularizing that product?
Yeah. So you have to, regularize this by using a lot of zeta functions, gamma functions, and so on and so forth. But we can extract this result. Okay, so it seems like it really works even for higher dimensions. Okay, so this brings me to the conclusion. So summarizing, we translated the TQFT path integrals to many-body invariant written in terms of given microscopic many-body wave functions. So we think these topological invariants plays a similar role as many-body Chern numbers. So I think I skip, for example, disorder, but there are many other applications. In particular, other cases, different dimensions and different symmetries. But I think what is missing here is it seems like these calculations suggest that our invariants work. They are very, very, very quantized, but there's no really a proof. For example, for the many-body Chern number, we have a very good kind of sense that if there is the finite spectral gap, many body channel number must be quantized. It's robust. We don't have currently that level of understanding of a many body invariant, but at least within our trial, it seems to work. So maybe more work will be necessary to verify, testify this validity of our topological invariants. Okay, so with that, thank you very much.
Any other question? So when you do it numerically on the lattice in the 3 plus 1 decay, do you take a cube or what kind of region?
We just put the periodic boundary conditions.
But then your subregion?
A subregion is a ball, but it's it's not really a ball, but...
So it's kind of lattice-sized?
That's right, that's right.
Ball,
that's right, but it has to be consistent with inverse.
Okay. And maybe another question? This invariant, say on RP21, RP4, it depends on actually the spin structure. So like the sign of this invariant.
Yes. Yeah, so in that case, you consider partial reflection combined with fermion number parity. Yeah. But you get the same conclusion.
So in the free fermion calculation of the plus one new system, you not only get the non-trivial phase, but some non-trivial amplitude.
Right.
But that amplitude can be changed by turning on interaction.
That's a very good question, and we don't know. Within fermion classification, it seems to be rather universal, because we are kind of surprised, because this part is independent of microscopic DT, just a number, for example. This part is obviously non-universal, but numerics, I didn't put it here, but numerics detect not just this phase part, but even detect this part. So within free fermion calculation, this seems to be rather robust, but we haven't seen, how robust this is in the presence of this other interaction. We haven't tested.
Possibly, if you pose an amplitude theory, maybe this is related to your topological entanglement.
But that's a very good comment. Yeah. I mean, this looks like topological entanglement. Yes. Yeah, in fact, these numbers, I think, so here, this amplitude is like 1 over square root of 2. These are, in some sense, quantum dimensions of Majorana fermions, yes. Yeah.
So in one
case,
it doesn't depend on
the
interactions, this 1 over square root, 1 over 2 square root.
But actually, I forgot. I think,
so.
So there is the, we looked at one example, which is convenient for us, because you add a particular 4 fermion interaction to the Kittev chain, and there is such interaction for which we can write down exact ground state wave functions, and we looked at this invariant for this particular many-body wave function, so the phase is obviously quantized, but kind of convergence to this quantized bar is somewhat slower, depending on your interaction strength. But it's the converse. If you make interval bigger and bigger, much bigger than the correlation length, eventually it quantizes. I forgot if you looked at this amplitude for the interacting case. Yeah. That's an interesting question, but we can simply check.
So. When I apply this classification to real microscopic system, real microscopic fermionic system, they could have collective bosonic excitation. So this bosonic excitation could be gapless. So will that destroy this kind of classification?
So that's actually the we don't know, but actually the motivation to formulate this many-body invariant is precisely to answer this question. So with this formalism, we can, for example, go ahead and do 1D Monte Carlo for something like that to see.
Do a microscopic model which includes everything.
Yeah. Phase fluctuation, for example, yeah.
So it still holds your classification? Still holds?
I think with...
I think what he's asking, well, perhaps part of your question, is whether it holds for gapless systems.
So that's a good question. We don't know. For example, I think Majorana end state is known to kind of leak into the bulk, like with power or decay or something like that. So yeah, it's an interesting question, even in that case. But the nice thing about this formalism is that it's written in terms of in many body language. So in principle, we can just evaluate to see if it is true or not. Yes, we haven't done this, but it's formalism allows us to do so.
Okay, so perhaps I misunderstood your definition of this partial time reversal, but I wonder, this expression looks at least superficially similar to the matrix whose trace you compute, looks at least superficially similar to the matrix that emerges in the definition of concurrence in quantum information theory. So I wonder if these two things are actually related.
So we are trying to actually make a relation, in fact. So it's related to concurrence, but I think we are looking at something we call negativity. And the negativity is usually defined in terms of partial transpose. And the so our partial time reversal is different from partial transpose, but we're trying to make a connection here.
Maybe a comment on this. Out of this plot here, it looks like this is an entanglement monotone. So that's really possible that it's related, right?
If I can show it's entanglement and monotone, I'm very happy.
Looking at this plot, it's almost clear to me now.
Okay. But this is just one example. So.
Yeah, sure.
One last question.
There's a BG, like a classification space that you get into the cobordism group, and you also discretize this for the path integral. And I missed it, but is there like a reason behind? Can you know ahead of time what the correct BG to put in is?
Yeah. So BG itself is if you specify your symmetry G, I will put BG there.
Okay. Yeah. It sort of sounded like you were saying, well, we know what the answer has to be, so if we put in RP2, we'll get Z2.
We are motivated by this. Yeah.
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 Okay. Let's ask.